This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, as well as right here in Lafayette, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'm very proud to welcome Iberia Bank as Discover Lafayette's premier sponsor. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered here in Lafayette. With 329 combined locations throughout the South, they offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Iberia Bank supports educational, cultural, and business development efforts that make a difference in the many communities they serve, including sponsoring this podcast. For more information, please visit iberiabank.com. Gus Resende is our guest today. A native of Brazil, Gus came to the U.S. in 1999 on a tennis scholarship at Georgia Southwestern State University. Today, he's a partner with BJ Christ in social entertainment, and they co-own Central Pizza and Bar, four tropical smoothie cafe locations, and Dick's Almost Famous Daiquiris. Social entertainment is also known for its creative flair in coordinating events such as Uncle Sam's Jam, concerts at Corette Farms, and the Acadiana Po' Boy Festival. Upcoming fun events include Bubbles and Brunch on May 18th at Sugar Mill Pond, the Mother's Day Drag Brunch at Jefferson Street Pub, and Downtown Rising featuring The Revivalist. In 2016, Social Entertainment was honored as the Startup Business of the Year, and this year, Gus was named the 2019 Rising Young Business Leader, both awards being given at the Junior Achievements Annual Business Halls of Fame. And Gus, I can't wait to hear more about you. I do want to get in. You're married to Catherine, and you have two sons, Luca and Marco, and last year you became a U.S. citizen. So we have a lot to talk about. Welcome to
Thank
Discover.
Thanks for having me, Jan. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure.
You know, before we started taping, I was asking you about your background. So why don't we just start with how you ended up in the U.S., and would you pronounce your hometown?
Absolutely. Born and raised in São Paulo, Brazil.
Thank you.
the largest city, not just in Brazil, but in South America, one of the largest cities in the world. Crazy. We were born kind of in the middle of the craziness in the town, and played tennis growing up. My family, my sister, my parents kind of uprooted their lifestyle to be able to kind of help me through the tennis career as a junior player, and I was fortunate enough to attain a scholarship, a full scholarship in the United States, and I moved here in 99.
Did you speak English?
Very little, almost none. I think that the interesting thing was that we already had a few Brazilians in the team, and it was almost like they helped me kind of be able to pass on the tests that I needed and focus in what was important to get into school. But the English was really bad. So I remember my first couple of years, how interesting going to class was.
I wasn't even thinking about school. I was thinking really about the tennis circuit. But you were taking college level classes.
You know, luckily we had advisors that knew how to handle international students, so you know, we took the algebras, we took the geology classes, we stay away from the English 101 for about a year, you know, but I remember having to, you know, borrow people's notes. The reading and the writing was way better than the speaking and the understanding, so
you could test.
So I could test, and you know, I would take classes that I didn't have to write essays. You know, I took classes that it was more simple testing, until, you know, eventually I was able to catch on.
So you don't have a Georgia Southern accent?
No, not anymore.
Did you ever?
I don't know if I did. You know, I think eventually, you know, I've been in Lafayette much longer than I was in those other locations. So I have a little Cajun Brazilian, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Georgia's similar to us. I find that culture there to be quite similar.
Correct.
So you graduated from Georgia Southwestern State University, and you ended up working here during the summers.
Correct.
For Robert Daigle, right at the City Club. If you
That's
can
right.
share some of that with us.
Yeah. So in my first summer in college, we drove up to New York City to find a place to teach, and we found a tennis camp called Future Stars. And interesting enough, our boss was a native Lafayette, Chad Hebert. And he was also there during the summer just to have a summer job with already the intention of moving down to Lafayette again. He was mm-hmm. actually living, he was a head coach at Troy University at that time. And he basically, we connected, we became friends, not only me, but also some of my roommates. They were actually from Brazil as well. And he said, guys, look, you guys are welcome to come to Lafayette next summer
yeah.
instead of coming up to New York again. And the rest is history. You know, we drove mm-hmm. up to Lafayette in the summer of 2002 and then 2003. And then when I graduated in college, at that point, I built a good book of mm-hmm. business with some clientele teaching. And I've had a few events already under my belt. You know, Rhythms on the River was one of the things I got involved in the front end in helping. Obviously, mm-hmm. There were many more people that got the concept started. We also did a lot of tennis tournaments and a mm-hmm. lot of mostly sporting events. And that's kind of how my professional career started in Lafayette.
Right.
You know, part-time teaching, part-time working on events and marketing for mm-hmm. City Club and River Ranch. And so then everything else grew from there.
You stayed with City Club for a few years.
I stayed with City Club full-time for at least 7 years. Mm-hmm. And as Robert and his team continue to grow which today is Southern Lifestyle Development,
right.
As they were opening more developments, they understood I had a knack for events and I enjoyed mm-hmm. doing that. And I was able to start getting those accounts. Sugar Mill Pond, Sugar Jam, which has been 10 years now.
Yeah.
Concerts at Corette. I mean, mm-hmm. and now we're lucky to work for the social entertainment provides pretty much all the programming for all the Southern Lifestyle Developments across the state and Alabama and Mississippi. So we're, you know, we're very fortunate. So we're very busy with programming our staff. Mm-hmm. We have a team focus on event planning that not only we produce our own events, the ones you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. but also the ones that
for Southern Lifestyle,
for their communities.
I may be putting you on the spot, but how many subdivision like developments do they have across the South?
They're one of the fastest growing companies when it comes to residential development.
Uh-huh.
So I know as far as our programming developments that are ready for us to provide with programming and events and festivals. We're mm-hmm. working on about 10 different developments right now. So
yeah,
it's pretty extensive.
That's exciting.
Yes.
Well, how did you and BJ Crist meet? Was he a post-college friend? How did y'all become
BJ,
partners?
BJ, football player for UL, born in New Orleans. We were lucky to meet through some mutual friends from City Club at that time. We were close to the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing was we had my first food and beverage establishment was Tropical Smoothie in River Ranch. And I was going through the struggles of learning how to run and operate a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And BJ, for some reason, he was a medical rep at that time, and he just really enjoyed the product. And I think at that time, he was already eyeing what business he was going to get into it. And he constantly would come and have breakfast. And I remember either being on the register or making food and just mm-hmm. really learning the ins and outs. And we kind of developed a friendship and quickly realized we could do stuff together. You know, I think one interesting thing about BJ and I is that we have, there's a lot of things that we complement each other in our, you know, ways of doing business mm-hmm. and ways of the way we've grown. You know,
right.
So BJ was already, you know, really enjoyed Tropical Smoothie, despite the fact that that specific location was having a hard time getting it off mm-hmm. the ground. We learned a lot, obviously, from that failure, but, you know, we were able to then...
Yeah, you've got four now.
From there, kind of, we really believed the brand, and we right. felt that was a good product, you mm-hmm. know, but that's how BJ and I met, you know, him just literally curious, and
right.
he liked the hummus veggie, and he would come and eat that thing every morning, and from
his
there...
bean smoothie or something.
Yeah, and then from there, we grew a friendship, and we start, you know, acquiring and different businesses... Jefferson Street Pub, Dick's were businesses that at that time weren't thriving, and mm-hmm. We saw an opportunity to take over at a relatively inexpensive investment for mm-hmm. us at that time. And we're like, well, we can learn from these businesses and we maybe right. can bring them back. And that's kind of how we started in this industry. So.
Right. Are there, I know you also opened in the recent past Central Pizza and Bar. Was there like a trend in food you were looking at to keep it consistent in your management? You know, the smoothies, the daiquiris, the Central Pizza by the slice. I mean, are there things that work that you found a formula that works, or you just go for what?
No, it wasn't really a formula regarding the cuisine or regarding the product itself. I think it was a combination of all our good and bad experiences mm-hmm. from the moment we started with the first tropical smoothie, the ups and downs owning Jefferson Street Pub, a big business with a lot of responsibility, Dick's Daiquiris, businesses that were already being operated by past owners, and we took over operations mm-hmm. and we tried to bring them back. We quickly realized how difficult that is in business, instead of starting from scratch.
I see.
And I think what Central is just literally the combination of all the knowledge that mm-hmm. we have acquired and building an amazing partnership of owners. You know, Central is not just BJ and I. Central is Colin Cormier from Pops,
yes.
John Peterson from Swan Pop, Mike Delcom from The Green Room. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we build an awesome team of people that have experienced goods and bads in their professional careers.
Right.
And that's what Central really became. It was this kind of, you know, this group of guys that just kind of really everybody brought something to the table.
That is a good group of guys.
And now we're working on a new concept together again, two doors down. You know, so we're very excited about the partnership we created. You know, everybody brought something. So.
And what's your newest venture that you're working on?
The new one is Tula, which we just have a sign up, so I'm mm-hmm. allowed to talk about it.
T-U-L-A,
uh-huh. Tula Tacos and Amigos. It's literally two doors down from Central. Is the old Frankie Burger that has a really awesome courtyard mm-hmm. in the back. We plan to open late May, but Tula is another really, you know, from the heart concept that my partners and I have worked on over the last year and a half, right after Central took off, and it's really a celebration of bringing people together. And you know, the whole idea of tacos and amigos is mm-hmm. that we want people to come and make new friends and spend time in the beautiful courtyard back there. The food's going to be as authentic as it can be, Mexico City style. You know, we sent our executive chef to Mexico City a month mm-hmm. ago to really just get into the culture and mm-hmm. understand what street tacos really, really mean and really are to the community there. So, you know, we are not going to be a Mexican restaurant, but we're going to have flares of mm-hmm. some authenticity of what the Mexican, especially the Mexican city community,
right.
Sees tacos as. And then we're going to have a little bit of the coastal California feel mm-hmm. that when you go hang out, you sit down, you have a couple drinks, and you sit in a really nice, cool courtyard in the back.
Right.
So Tula is definitely a labor of love, and we just like Central was, and we're excited to have it open downtown mm-hmm. in the near future. So.
Is it considered to be a restaurant more than a bar? I know that there's no more moratorium on bars.
Correct.
But is it more food?
Definitely
focused?
Restaurant, uh-huh. Family friendly. You know, mm-hmm. I think Central really showed us and showed the downtown community that it was, you know, it was just really a matter of time, you know, with Tsunami and Pamplona and French Press and so many other businesses holding the fort for so long in really great culinary mm-hmm. restaurants. Central came in and kind of complemented that, but also show people that downtown is ready for more of this awesome establishments. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just happy to be part of this process.
Right.
But Tula, it's a restaurant that will have an awesome bar program, but it will be completely family friendly. We want kids and we want the kids, the parents to go pick up their kids and come have some tacos, maybe grab a margarita. Mm-hmm. And maybe if they grab too many margaritas, they'll take an Uber home with their kids.
Course.
You know, we'll figure it out. There's
right.
a way to do it. So.
Yeah. Well, I want to take a moment too and talk about another new neighbor that was announced. I know that Ben Berthelot announced that Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission will be moving into the downtown area. And I wanted to just thank their staff and Ben for their support of this podcast. And I know you mentioned too that they're one of your business partners helping support the events that are put on every year. So
Absolutely. Ben is awesome. You know, Ben has done so much for the community. And coming downtown is definitely a statement, you know, that this is what's happening downtown is real. I think it has been talks over the last decade. Are things going to catch on or not? And I think now is real. You know, with Anita's leadership on DDA and DLU.
We're so lucky.
It's unbelievable. The kind of the small wins, the true progress that we're making now and being able to get things done rather than just have those big long-term visions and plans.
Yeah. Travel somewhere now, else. We can just stay here.
Now we're actually getting things done. You know, even those travels are actually, we're taking them and we're getting things done. So Ben is one of our annual partners at Social Entertainment. We have about 30 local companies that instead of us going out asking for sponsorship in every single event, what we have created in our event side, you know, the part of the company is that we ask companies to consider being a partner for the year. And that involves them being part of every event we do and whatever level they choose to be part of it. So LCVC is one of them.
Yeah.
And Ben
gets it.
Yeah, Ben gets it. Every event, he knows that there's going to be more hotels booked. Yeah. There's going to be more people coming to visit Acadiana, specifically Lafayette. So Ben has done a great job.
Yeah. You know, I was downtown. It was one Friday morning. I think I was going to Keller's because my husband loves their pastries. And it was a slow summer day, a Friday morning. And I saw some tourists. And it could have been you guys. I think they were from France. But they didn't really speak much English. I'm looking at your sister that's here with us, who's in from Brazil. And without having the Convention and Visitors Commission downtown, they didn't really know what to do. And I think they were here for the day and had been dropped off. And most people gravitate to a city's downtown first. And I couldn't really communicate with them. And I thought, when I heard that LCVC was going to stay where they are for, you know, as you enter the town.
Correct.
But the main office will be downtown. I think that's a win-win for all
of us. It's a huge win.
I mean, especially for tourists.
Without a doubt. You know, I think the whole question about the viability of downtown over the years has been, you know, is downtown has to grow because the immediate businesses there, they need to prosper, or because downtown needs to grow because it actually helps the entire parish.
Right.
And I think when you have city councilmen and mayors from other cities outside Lafayette, Scott, which I spoke to the mayor of Scott, Youngsville, when they're coming back from trips and going, well, now I understand the power of an urban core as actually going to help my city. Mm-hmm. And it's not about competition. It's about tax revenue. It's about growth.
Yeah,
it's about infrastructure that already exists that we don't need to be building out for now. We already probably done enough for now. Maybe let's go back in. And I think that's what it's showing. And LCVC coming in downtown is a statement of that, you know. So I'm just excited about the momentum that we're experiencing, which is good for everyone that lives in the parish.
Now, you're active on downtown development.
Correct.
Is that right? Would you talk about that some, about some of the your other thoughts on downtown, what's coming up on the horizon?
There's a lot going on. Obviously, big developments. You know, I'm just honored to be on the board, you know, and be able to serve Anita's, you know, and Miles, our chairman. And you know, I'm very proud of the work they have done in the last 6 months, actually the last probably 4 months, understanding that the only way that you get to those big wins is if you keep working on incremental wins. Mm-hmm. I think that was some of the struggles we had in the past. We looked too far out, and we weren't able to just do the basics when it came to repairs and maintenance and programming and the things that keeps people excited. And then also changing the frame of mind of the stakeholders downtown. I mean, at one point, I noticed there was a lot of people burned out, a lot of people that were just unhappy about that downtown was not, you know, doing the things that we thought it should. And with that came an attitude that I will only do my part, or I will only invest when I see certain things getting fixed. Well, we quickly realized that was not the way to go about it. And now we're seeing that we have to take charge and, you know, you push the bad with good.
Right.
You know? And I think that's kind of has been the transition point for everybody. You know, people that we used to have, you know, constructive, I wouldn't say arguments, but discussions in the past. It's all united now. It's really interesting the way it has evolved. And Anita has a lot to do with that because she brings that energy, and we have to do it together. You
know? She's such a can-do leader.
Correct.
We had lunch recently, and we were talking about, as one example, the parking garage by the courthouse. And as a lawyer, I'm not in court a lot. I'm really never, but I meet with the judges and do different things. And, you know, that is a big hole that we need to fill in downtown, just so workers have a place they can park safely so that others can use parking, you know, as they travel to the downtown area. But that was just like one little piece. And she's just so I think, visionary about things she'd like to see. And hopefully with the mayor's race coming up, there can be a lot more discussion about what downtown, you know, residents, businesses, and others would like to see, but also what will it take as a community to build that.
You know, piggybacking on that, you know, the last time we had a meeting, a board meeting, you know, there was a lot of excitement of the people that came back from Greenville. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, the excitement wasn't just the typical folks that always go to those trips.
Right.
It was the people that I thought would, first of all, never go to those trips. And second, they, okay, this is what it means to really get our core. And it's not just downtown, it's the oil center, it's campus, you know, it's more than that, you know. So, I'm just excited. I think what Anita is doing is pressuring people like me downtown to go outside of my box and speak to people that either are not interested or have other things going on, and just give them that glimpse that downtown can be one of the things that can bring our parish to a little more healthy financial deal. Because we all know the struggles our current mayor has had in keeping the budget, you know, what he of the national economic issues, you know. So we are aware of that, and we all know how much our parishes, you know, at times has struggled financially, which obviously affects our city. So we think downtown is one of those solutions, you know, to fix those problems.
Well, speaking of learning, you mentioned a while ago, early in the interview, that you had had some early businesses and you learned a lot.
Correct.
If you're not uncomfortable, would you share some thoughts about how you've grown as a business person, and include BJ or whoever, but every business you opened didn't just shoot to the forefront of success. I mean, you were saying that you've learned in your, I guess, the last decade or so. Would you talk some about
that? I'm actually way more interested to talk about that than some of the successes, because it's really what made us strong and created a foundation. You know, it's a lot of trial and error in our industry. It's an industry where everybody wants to be part of it. You know, people that retire and people that were attorneys or people that worked in the oil field, they're like, well, I can make a good jambalaya, so I think I can open a restaurant. And I think there's a lot of that, you know, and that really affects the overall margin of success rate, you know, for our industry in a way. You know, there is a lot of competition in Lafayette. There's just so much, there's so many odds against your ability to be successful. Plus, we know in a national scale how difficult restaurants are, period, and bars. So some of the struggles were pretty clear. We had a tropical smoothie in River Ranch, where maybe a little too soon, maybe a tough location in the town square, maybe the brand recognition wasn't there at that time. So we struggled. 3 years later, we had to close the doors. You know, Village Market, Youngsville, the intentions was to create more vibrancy, maybe a little too early. So a lot of lessons were learned in those concepts. And a lot was to do with timing, but a lot was to do with my lack of experiencing how to run it and my lack of experiencing how to prioritize what was important and how to properly hire and how to properly lead and how to properly engage with people. So all that came with time, you know. So we made hundreds of mistakes. We still do a ton, I mean, all the time, but the idea is not to make the same one again.
Right,
and I think we've gotten better, you know. But as we've gotten better, the team has gotten bigger, so the responsibilities have gotten much larger. So besides those, failures, because obviously we closed the doors, you know, I look at Jefferson Street Pub as being one of the biggest challenges in my professional career, because it was a big, you know, we call it a big animal, you know, it was an elephant, you know, it wasn't like a little, it was a big building that meant a lot for downtown, especially in times where downtown was going through a lot of ups and downs. And I think there was a lot of fake it until you make it kind of thing, that we did a lot of community-based events to keep the energy going. But at times we remember how difficult it was to bring people downtown on a Tuesday night, on a Wednesday night, despite how great we thought our burgers were, our draft collection was. And I think other business owners felt the same thing, you know. So looking back, Jefferson Street Pub today is thriving mm-hmm. with new ownership, and but we're very proud of the work we've done in keeping the business moving, even though at times, you know, my wife and I think BJ's wife felt, you know, going home and going, this is going to be a tough weekend. You know, let's just hope for the best. Hopefully it won't rain, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think those are the lessons that mm-hmm. we think about all the time. All the employees that that knew, you know, and they knew that was important for us to keep our head down and keep moving forward, mm-hmm. not to be bragging when times are good and not to be, you know,
poor mouthing
when mm-hmm. things are not going well. And I'm very proud of that. That's kind of what I'm the most proud of, is that, you know, I was able to say, guys, we're moving on from Jefferson Street Pub. There's a new guy, awesome guy taking over. And, you know, and we have an amazing relationship with all these employees that are still there today. So
that's
to me, that is really, is way cooler than anything else. You know, mm-hmm. It's those kind of results. But yeah, we had plenty of tough times, and we still do. So,
well, I guess we all do, but I have to tell you guys, to me, opening a restaurant seems like the hardest thing anybody could do, because I just, even calculating what to purchase, what the trends are, you might think everybody's going to eat burgers and they want the fish, or, you know, it just amazes me when restaurants open, especially locally owned, that
correct.
That isn't a, because you don't I guess Tropical Smoothie is a franchise.
It's a franchise, correct.
Uh-huh. So they give you some formulas.
And it has helped us for the ones we have here to have that kind of corporate mindset, even though we want to be extremely local. Mm-hmm. In the face of it, you know, behind the scenes procedures and systems, we took a lot away from those lessons from Tropical Smoothies.
Right. So I know you've got locations around town here, but you're focusing on downtown for your new development. Is that kind of your focus overall, the downtown core?
Our focus as a company is Lafayette Parish mm-hmm. and the South Louisiana as a whole. So from the event side, you know, we're really traveling as far mm-hmm. as we can go, as far as people see the need to hire our services for any mm-hmm. sort of event solution, event curation, production. Obviously, I have an affinity for downtown just because I live so close by. I live on the same streets, mm-hmm. and my wife and I and my kids, we usually downtown, we use downtown as a playground.
Yeah.
I want my kids to grow up on this urban setting just like mm-hmm. I did.
You can ride your bikes there.
We can ride our bikes there, and we can only see things only getting better, and, mm-hmm. and the connectivity and the walkability only improving. But, you know, we are growing, you know, Tropical Smoothie is growing across the parish. You know, we have a location mm-hmm. in New Iberia that we opened about 3 months ago. We have a location in Carencro. We're currently building in the south side of Lafayette next to the Lourdes Hospital, which will be one location on the far north of Ambassador, one the south.
What a great location. How about
schools? We're excited.
Yeah.
So Tropical Smoothie is growing across the mm-hmm. parish and even beyond that, you know, but the more curated concepts, the things like Tula that we're about mm-hmm. to open, you know, it's concentrated in downtown. Some of our events are concentrated downtown, but some are in Youngsville.
Yep.
You know, we have the Play Lunch Festival in Youngsville every fall. We have the Po' Boy Festival mm-hmm. in downtown every spring. So we try to sprinkle all those things across the parish because, you know, we have to be able to diversify, you know, not just on the restaurants, but also in the events.
And these events, I mean, when I saw y'all were doing Mother's Day drag brunch,
correct.
I just thought, what a great idea, especially after all the news, you know, at the library, just to have a fun event. And
yes, we've hosted a few of those even prior mm-hmm. to that mm-hmm. those unfortunate, you know, circumstances in the media and how the whole thing went down. I mean, we've been hosting events like that because we're in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. So to us was always a no-brainer to host events that are inclusive to anyone, because that's how we're going to succeed. So it was never really about what happened. It was the fact that we've done it. You know, mm-hmm. this is probably our third or fourth event that we host show.
Yeah.
No incidents, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we've done lunch, we've done brunches, we've done late nights, we've done all kinds of different performances. So at the end of the day, a lot of times as a company, we kind of look past that, mm-hmm. you know, the hype. That because we have to focus on what our clients want, and a lot of times our clients want diversity. Not all times, but they want events. They're going to experience something different.
Mm-hmm.
So this event is it's not our first time doing it. So it's the first time doing a Mother's Day. I think that's going to be super fun.
I love the combo. You know? Yeah.
I think people are going to come Shake and bring up. Their moms. I mean, as a matter of fact, one of our good friends, my Marco's godmother, Dusty, she's watching the boys because my wife and I are going.
You
We're
going
actually going
to
go, you know, because we want to go have fun. And so, yes, May 12th. So.
Yeah. And then, let's see, Bubbles and Brunch, May 18th. At Sugar Mill Pond, that looks like a hoot.
Bubbles and Brunch, huge success. Over 1,000 people came in last year. Bubbles and Brunch is as straight up as it can be. You pay a set price, you come in, and you get a little cup, and you sample 10 different champagnes throughout the morning. And Tony Sacheris pull up their food truck in there, and you sample 3 to 4 brunch dishes,
what
and that's
deal.
It.
Yeah.
And you just literally listen to music, play some fun games, and it's basically an adult fun day, you know, so it's a no-brainer. People love that stuff. So,
and another really big event we were mentioning is Downtown Rising featuring the Revivalist. Now that's at the end of May.
Correct. That is an event that, you know, my team and I, we've been brainstorming for over the years going, you know, if these things downtown continue to connect the way they're connecting, and then obviously with Anita's coming in and Maureen coming in at DLU and the new board and new businesses, not just ours, but other, you know, Rock and Bow and Dead Dog and, you know, retail starting to pop and residential now, obviously, full of, you know, 4 developments, if I'm not mistaken, currently being built. We just felt that it would be cool to kind of honor that momentum. And we created Downtown Rising, which, you know, I encourage people to go to Downtown Rising on Facebook and kind of read the mission of the event. We hope to be an annual downtown celebration a month after Festival International. It will be a ticketed event, and we hope to bring a national act every end of May. And this year we're bringing Revivalist, which is the name kind of says it all. You
it
know,
does.
It's like the whole purpose of the event and Revivalist, you know, a band that when I started my career, they were starting their career. And I remember booking music at Grand Street, you know, as one of my first times booking bands. And we booked the Revivalists for a few $100s, and they drove in a van, you know, they were all going to Tulane at that time. And they were amazing musicians, and we paid almost nothing for them to come play.
And
they probably spent more money coming here than actually getting paid, and now they're huge nationally.
Right.
And now it's such a cool thing. So we're selling tickets at socialentertainment.net right now. It's doing really well. The community is excited, and we hope to do Downtown Rising for years to come. Hopefully, we'll continue to celebrate what's happening.
I know it's going to be great. And then just last year, I do want to get this in 2018, you became a U.S. citizen. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Was that hard? Is it
a very hard
process?
Yeah, there's no really a structural way to say, you know, it depends on where you're from, because different countries have different treaties, and there are different times of, you know, depending on what president it's currently running or country. I say our country now. It was hard because, you know, there was a time when I came with I came in with a student visa in 1999. And after so many years, your student visa runs out. And then they will give you an OPT visa, which is a visa for you to find a job within a certain amount of time within your industry or within your major.
So you
and then that runs out.
Yeah.
And then you get a work visa, which the company has to employ, sponsor you, which I was so lucky. City Club sponsored me for so many years. But, you know, what I tell a lot of friends of mine is that we get so caught up talking about immigration reform, thinking that it's all about the focus and what's happening on our border, that we forget the immigration report is about the visa, how do you get a visa, how to stay with a proper visa in this country. The biggest issue we have is people getting out of status, not people being actually illegally here. People actually, their visas are running out, and the fact that our system is broken, there is no other visas for them to apply to. So it's not about people coming illegally, it's people coming legally but then going out of status. And I've had situations in my life where I was on a verge many times of being out of status until my attorney could find me, hey, we can go to this direction, you can get a visa here. So it was a very grueling time. There were times where I could not go home to see my family.
You couldn't risk leaving.
I could not risk leaving. There were times where for almost 2 years, I could not leave. It was really hard, you know, for my mom, for my dad. You know, so we went through this, you know. the step was to get what was to attain my green card. It, the goal, the initial goal is how do I get my residency, you know, which they used to call green card, now is your resident. A lot of people choose just to be a resident. A lot of people choose not to be a citizen. To me, it was a no-brainer. As soon as I was eligible to apply for citizenship after getting my residency, to me, it was a no-brainer because of my involvement in the city,
right?
How Lafayette took me in.
And you weren't going to be going back.
Going to go back to live in Brazil. I wanted to vote here. I was paying my taxes here. You know, even though for the longest time, people were like, you must do great because you don't have to pay taxes. I was like, you own all these businesses. You don't have to pay taxes. I was like, well, it doesn't, you know, yeah, I actually pay taxes. Yeah. But, you know, I was excited to vote. You know, I was excited to, you know, because I didn't have that civic mentality growing up. It's not something that in Brazil, unfortunately, we're millions of light years away from being civically oriented. You know, it's one of the biggest things that we have back home. And it wasn't Georgia either. It wasn't in college. It was really in Lafayette that when I got to know some people, I grew to understand how much you can do locally. You know, you may not have much control over state and federal matters,
but locally you can.
But locally, you can
do
so much. Yeah. You know, and people can be real cynical about it. Mm-hmm. But I've learned that, you know, my friends and I, we have learned that, you know, all it takes is go speak to your city council, go ask for things, go bug, email people, call people, go to the meetings on Tuesday nights. It works. Yeah. It really does. I mean, we, you know, the parklet we got downtown, you know, it was like, well, how did you get this parklet? Well, it took 2 years. We had to write an ordinance and it got, had to get passed. The mayor had to sign and the city had to come up with a system in how to get it done. But you got it done. So those are the things I'm proud of. But the citizenship, the residency was much tougher than the citizenship. Becoming a...
Getting your card.
Getting a card to know that I was going to be okay. That was the toughest part. Getting a citizen was the fun part. You know, going to the courthouse
taking
in Alexandria
test.
And taking the test and getting sworn in. That was just the cherry in the cake. You know, that was awesome.
It's hard to imagine not voting, I bet. You know, everything you went through.
Correct.
And when I see people that just don't vote, it just floors me because it's such a privilege that
it
we
is.
Have to make a difference. And you can't complain if you don't participate.
Correct.
So. Yeah. Well, have I asked you, I mean, are there things that you wanted to bring up that I haven't asked you yet? Is this...
Well, one of the things, when talking about voting, you know, we encourage everybody to really pay attention, you know, in what's going on locally. There's a big election coming in the end of the year. All I ask is people in the community to get to know who's running and what they're behind and what they stand for. I really believe that Lafayette is in an interesting crossroads right now, you know, when it comes to development, when it comes to investment, not just in investment in real estate, but in education, in how we grow our city in a more technologically smart way. There's so much happening now that we need to capitalize on. And so I just encourage everybody to know who could potentially, knowing that our mayor has decided not to run again, I encourage people to know who's running and making sure that you get educated about that. That's one of the main things.
That's
great
advice.
And then come eat in our restaurants too.
I mean, whether it's pizza or
that's right, or come to our events. You know, either or.
So. I gotcha. Well, we're here with Jason Sikora from Raider Solutions, and Jason, I know you've got some questions. He's been making a ton of notes.
I filled up my whole piece of paper here. So a couple comments first. I'm really glad that you brought up visas and immigration and talked about that a bit. I went to a music school in Los Angeles where I was one of only a few white Americans. That everybody else was from Switzerland and Japan, and so many of them wanted to come learn music and then stay and play music. One of my buddy's bands had a Switzerland drummer, and after 4 years, he was kicked out of the country because he couldn't get his visa, and so they had to find a local drummer. And it's super, super tough. It's not just, like you said, a border issue. It's a bigger issue. So thank you for mentioning that. And so I went from LA to what my wife calls the other LA, Louisiana.
That's right.
And you mentioned the phrase urban core, and that just reminded me that in Los Angeles at the time that I was there, up until about 2010, there was a singer from France that I had met that had come to visit for a couple of years, and she was also a writer, and mentioned how LA is so confusing, Los Angeles, because there is no urban core. Downtown is a disaster. Santa Monica's like its own thing. Hollywood's not really an urban core. Burbank isn't. So there's nowhere for people to like get together centrally and do things. And I'm glad to see you guys working on downtown Lafayette to make it an urban core. And I'm glad you used that phrase. All right, I'm going to jump around here a little bit. What was the process of getting a scholarship?
Scholarship was tennis.
But did they seek you out, or did you seek them out?
Both. Okay. You know, at the tournaments, by the time I was 15, 16, I was already on my own, traveling in a couple different countries in South America. Also traveling within the states in Brazil. And at that time, you know, the American coaches, they send some assistants mm-hmm. to go to a specific tournament. I played a couple of tournaments in the U.S. when I was 16, 17 years old. Some top junior tournaments, you know. So I was a decent player, you know, and I think kind of helped. You know,
gotcha.
Help. Not anymore now. I've eaten too many pizzas, but I wasn't good enough to go into a career, which at that time as a teenager was the goal. I want to be Pete Sampras.
Yeah,
I want to be. You know, there were tournaments where I was already playing. Roger Federer was the number one in the world. You know, and we were playing in the same tournament, and he was only a year older than us. But and you know, so there were a lot of those goals. But I quickly realized that my you know, let's get a scholarship, let's get an education is a great opportunity. And at that time in the early 2000s, just getting a bachelor's degree from another country, especially United States, and being able to play college was huge. Now fast forward 20 plus years, mm-hmm. now you know there's a little more to it. Now you know grad school, there are a few more things that people are looking for. But at that time, just the fact that I left and I got a scholarship and I was going to graduate in America despite where I went to school was a huge deal back then. And I didn't want to look back. You know, I took that. My parents said, you go, you know, we'll figure it out.
Nice. So, say 15, 16 years old, was United States and moving here on your radar, or did it just kind of...
Yes. By the time I was in my last 2 years as a junior player, I knew that I already had friends that were here for high school, you know, friends that had the financial opportunity to come and actually even do high school before college. We're already talking. I already knew if I get an opportunity, you know, I seeked out, you know, University of Kentucky and UGA and Auburn, the big SEC schools. But, you know, it was all about having good SAT scores. I mean, I couldn't speak English, so I had to go to a much smaller school, which turned out to be the best thing. You know, I went to a very small school in Americus, Georgia, which is five minutes from Plains, Georgia, where President Jimmy Carter is from. He would come and give us little lectures. You know, at that time, I didn't realize how big of a deal that was, having the Secret Service coming into my classroom and Jimmy giving class, riding his bicycle all over Americus. And we went to a very small business school, only 3,000 to 4,000 students, you know. So I got lucky that I didn't go to a big tennis school, but I was able to get a great scholarship. I'm lucky compared to other people in this country. No student debt, you know. I just got real lucky, you know. Mm-hmm. So and then from there, it was never my intention to stay. You know, it was, I'm going to get my degree. I'm going to go home in 4 years.
But
by the time I was a junior, I already knew I was staying.
It only
took me a couple of years to know that I was going to build my life here.
Uh-huh.
It was just, things are so much easier in this country if you put your mind into stuff, if you stay focused, if you, you know, what I mean easier, it's not, you know, it's not really what I mean. What I mean is, if you put the energy into things, the chances of you succeeding in this country are much larger than in Brazil.
Oh, the focus,
It's just a fact, you know. It's like, they're just the way the things are structured, the way the services are provided from the private and the public sector here. Mm-hmm. If you just work hard, and I know people talk about the American dream kind of fading away. It just, compared to other countries, we are just light years ahead in opportunity still. I know things can always get better, but that's what I noticed in my second year in college. Like, man, if I just do this, I can actually get paid and I can go teach some tennis, and that's the kind of living I can make, and I can live in an apartment by myself at 22 years old. That will never happen in Brazil. My little sister left home as a very successful architect in an awesome firm in Brazil in her 30s, because her and her husband, they had to get married in order to be able to afford a place together. Uh-huh. You know, you can't just go and I'm going to rent a place half a mile from my parents' house. Mm-hmm. You know? So a lot of times people take it for granted how amazing and how accessible things are in this country. And I'm just lucky.
That's a very good point. What did you study in college?
Marketing. With a minor in management. That makes sense. Yeah.
All right, makes sense. And then so.
But let me tell you this. It was because it really is borderline pathetic. It was because it was easy. Well, it was because I couldn't speak any English.
Yeah.
And little did I know that going into law and not that I was nearly able to go through this because I was never really a great student. But it was really because I couldn't speak any English in my freshman year of college. And the professor said, look, marketing will be more broad classes, and which I ended up having an affinity for it. But it was definitely because of the...
But how fortuitous. Look what you've
correct.
Done with.
Yeah. But it was all exactly about like, it was all about, okay, what's the easiest class here? And that's what it was.
But it came to you.
It came to us.
Yeah.
It all fell into place. So socialentertainment.net is the website.
Correct.
And you guys do event planning. Can you be hired out by other companies to do event planning?
Okay,
that's basically what you do?
Correct. We and I'll give you a little list. We're providing services to the Cajun Dome right now. They have reached out to us because they appreciate some of the events we have created, and they're currently working on their state fair, and they want to create some new vibrancy to us. It's like, what can you do in the state fair that can bring some extra vibrancy? So we're creating the Southern Fry Showdown, which is basically a celebration of fry food.
Oh, yeah.
And there will be 10 local restaurants inside the fair selling fried items, like Central selling their cheese curds, and Dino's selling some of their top fried items, and Pop's Po' Boys. So Moncas Park, we spoke about EB and how awesome she is, but Moncas Park having a very small staff prior to construction, they seeked out our services to put on their events. Southern Lifestyle Development, a lot of nonprofits, they don't have a big staff, they don't have a big payroll, so they come to us and saying, look, we need a big event. What about we partner up and you keep a portion, we keep a portion, there's a management fee. So we work for private companies and nonprofits and public companies.
So if Raider Solutions wants to hire you guys to do an event for a charity or something, we could certainly bring you on board.
I'll give you my business card.
Excellent. Yeah. we have a couple ideas coming up, so we might need some help.
Without a doubt.
Finally, any dreams or big ideas or maybe a specific thing that you'd love to see either in downtown or somewhere in Lafayette that just hasn't quite been able to happen yet?
No big dream. I mean, we have the long-term vision, which is the downtown master plan. So, trying to be as practical as possible. Obviously, the dream is, an awesome hotel, awesome childcare services, a dog grooming place, a place for the seniors to be able to sit down in some really cool benches, and kids to have a playground. All those things are in the downtown master plan, and it's all about execution. So if we can just continue to execute the downtown master plan, bring more residential in, which will bring retail, will bring tech, mm-hmm. it will bring companies. Just having a place where my kids can just have a blast, like I did growing up, even in an urban area, that would be kind of the what we look for. It's just the continued growth of the urban core, not just downtown. And once again, which will be good for everyone. And I think there's a little, it has gotten better, but there was a little misconception about why, and the why is because it's proven in other towns that the towns that have invested in the urban core, they are actually succeeding financially, they're prospering as a town. So that to me is that's the dream. The dream is that we execute these things, that we have, 5 years from now, a couple thousand people living downtown, which is very possible. A few years from now, an awesome little grocery store that you can pick up your stuff. That to me is what, a dream will be good, because it will be great for my family, great for my friends' families, great for the community, and it will be great all around. So,
very good. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you guys
so
much.
Yeah, and thanks for letting me ask some questions.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you all so much.
Gus Resende, thank you for being on Discover Lafayette. I've wanted to meet you,
thank
and, you know, this is a good way to get to meet people. So it's a blast. doing this podcast. I couldn't do it without Raiders Solutions. Jason, thank you for taping us today. Iberia Bank is our premier sponsor, and of course, LCVC has helped me get this podcast going. So on behalf of all of them and our listeners, thank you for listening. You can find this interview and all of our interviews at discoverlafayette.net. We're also on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts. We ask that you please subscribe and visit our Facebook page and the internet, so the website. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift. Thank you.